She reined her warhorse in beside him. She was a woman of middle age, scarred on the face and hands, her boots muddied and scuffed, her coat of mail patched here and there with gleaming new rings of iron. Her longsword, sheathed in leather, swayed in front of him. A battered round shield hung by her knee, tied to the saddle. She shifted in the saddle to examine him. They stood in dead calm. Three strides beyond, the storm raged around them. Her gaze was at once distant and utterly piercing. If her eyes had color, he could not make it out. They seemed as black as a curse to him. He stared up at her, and a cold fear gripped his heart. "What must I pay you to ride to war?" she asked. Her lips moved with the words, but her voice, low and deep as the church bell, rang in his head with echoes scattering off it. Not knowing what else to do, he knelt. He did not let his gaze falter from hers. To blink might well prove fatal.
"Lady."
His voice was as hoarse as hers was resonant. He tried again.
"I am sworn to the church."
"Not in your heart," she said.
She drew her sword. Whatever he expected, no light flamed off the blade. It did not gleam or spark. It was dull metal, hard. Good metal, made for killing. In this fashion, Honor embarked upon her academic career, and despite her mother's concerns, she flourished at Mr. Heist's. By the time she was 7, she was already working at the theoretical level of her 12-year-old classmates. What made her truly remarkable, however, was her ability to invent and recall parameters. While other budding wizards were forced to write everything down and read everything out loud again when they were ready to incant, Anna could memorize pages worth of parameters as easily as a grocery list, and she could incant entirely without speaking. Though, of course, she was strongly warned against any attempts at major magical feats, for fear of her developing the wizard's swoons. Very few studies had been made of the effects of magical education on young girls, and it was generally thought that their more delicate natures would make them more susceptible to magically induced illness. The boys, for the most part, took being embarrassed by a little girl with admirable grace, and they alternated between teasing her to distraction and making a pet of her, bringing her sweets and allowing her to come along on their romps. By the time she was 13, she was, it must be confessed, rather spoilt by them. Though Anna was perhaps not quite as pretty as her elder sister, Mani, who was married to the village headman and had once posed as a shepherdess for a series of pastoral tableaux by a famous painter from Lycecourt, it still pleased the boys very much to be given the honor of escorting Anna home from school in the afternoons, or to pick up her handkerchief, should she happen to drop it. She was a small girl, quite unlike her statuesque elder sister, but she had a spotless, dark brown complexion, wide, startled-looking eyes that she accentuated by keeping her hair cropped very short, and full lips that lent themselves very agreeably to smiles at the boys who surrounded her. She smiled often, and as she grew older, her smiles increased with her awareness of how the boys reacted to them. They often seemed to look at her face as if it were an examination paper, and a frown at the weather or too tight stays or indigestion was a failing mark. Requiem lit the flame and checked that each incense stick was also ablaze. They contained a resin that gave off a unique aroma. As the lantern rose, she stepped back. It was beautiful, like the perfect stillness of a lake at dawn, or the soft curve of a woman's bare breast. It bobbed against the dusty ceiling, casting an ominous glow over the room. After watching it for a moment, she turned and left, closing the door firmly behind her. Requiem slid onto her motorcycle, a Kawasaki Ninja H2, and pulled her small silver MP3 player from her vest pocket. She pressed play, verified on the screen that the volume was at exactly the level she desired, and then put the earbuds in. After she zipped up her leather jacket and slid on her helmet, she revved the engine and roared away. The soul-cleansing strains of Avo Parts Fratres, string and percussion played on. 3 days later, Melbourne's Herald Sun reported that a man found in the hogtied position had been burnt to death in a small room in an abandoned building. Squatters had stumbled upon his remains and alerted police. The newspaper noted that over the past 7 weeks, the derelict industrial estate had been targeted by an arsonist who had set small, contained fires. So on the night of the blaze, fire units had not responded to reports of another incident. They were unusually busy, and it was deemed a waste of resources. Dental records determined that the deceased was a career criminal, wanted for the torture and assault of the daughter of a Melbourne crime family boss, Carlo Trioli. The Victorian Arson and Explosive Squad told the media they were initially baffled after discovering a small melted plastic substance in a room that had been doused in petrol. In addition to the petrol fumes, there was also a distinct smell they couldn't place.